飛び出さなきゃ見えないから、未来は連れて行って、最果てへと Fire away 恋の手を差し出す、あなたは私だけ選んでほしい。
It's July 19th and we're back for another episode of The Gur Talk to talk about episode 16 of this new show called Valkyrie, according to the screen I'm looking at, because it comes up with Valkyrie, or as I like to call it, Arid Knows Best. And with me on my left here I have...
Adrian Lozano, the returning champion from Anime Expo. And you guys were doing too much negative Macross 2 talking in the last episode.
Let's come back.
The last episode did suck.
We gotta get our licks in when you're not around.
That's right, you guys, bunch of weaklings.
All right, and so over from the US we have the mysterious Venus.
More or less alive, more or less awake.
You don't sound either, Egan.
Yeah, I'm gonna fade out slowly during the rest of the podcast.
Okay. And over that side of the pond with him is our very own version of Keith.
Yes. Hello. Mike Aguirre here, a.k.a. at Mike in Redlands. And yes, I'm wearing an eye patch right now for reasons that will go unnamed on this podcast.
Okay. And from down under, well, let's start in Sydney.
Hello. It's me. It's Craig. I'm back to... talk to these guys about all of the things they got wrong last week.
I'm used to that. I always have to put up with that, because if you guys remember, wasn't Ragnar supposed to blow up, if I'm not correct?
Hey, the bomb went off. The bomb went off.
No. It was Ragnar's blowing up, like Alderaan blowing up.
Well, the last time a Dimension Eater went off, that's what happened.
And, Gwyn being wrong is like a whole other level of wrong compared to like just general wrongness.
Yeah, that's like people's wrong.
All right, I'm editing exactly. That.
That's going to call for a censor beep.
All right, look, we need some government control to bring this back in line. So from Canberra we have...
Carice, hi. Coming back for another one this week.
A whole bunch of Americans just went, what's a Canberra?
Exactly. I should have said Canberra.
Oh, God.
No, here, I'll translate. I'll translate for the American audience. Canberra.
That's right. Like a vitamin. All right. And, of course, this is your host, Gwyn Campbell. And, look, it's been a great week for Macross Delta in general. Just today, Famitsu announced an announcement of a new video game for the PlayStation Vita called Macross Delta Scramble. Last weekend, public ticket sales for the Valkyrie concerts went on sale. And I'm not sure how many tickets they had left, but those things went instantly and crashed the website that they were selling them from for a good 40 minutes. So if that's any indicator of demand... It's a good sign, not so good for those who didn't get their tickets. The cover of the novelization of Delta has been revealed and is up for pre-order at Amazon. Cut magazine came out today, a music magazine with a huge 22-page article on Delta. And finally, chapter 3 of Macross E, the manga, comes out tomorrow. So I know in previous casts, guys, you know, we started... speaker podcast up to give context to what was going on with Macross and anime, and we're normally really busy getting into, you know, the gritty of Delta, so I just wanted to throw those things out there so people don't forget things are happening. It's not just the show, and there's a lot of other stuff going on, which hopefully we'll get to talk about more in other podcasts. Whew, that was quite a list. All right, but today we're here
to
talk about...
that the Blu-ray and DVD's dropping in like 48 hours.
Oh, yeah, not just the most important thing. You want to...
Yeah. The 22nd of this month will be the official drop of the first volume of episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Macross Delta with the official English subtitles, and that is both on the Blu-ray and DVD.
It'll be interesting to see those. definitely.
Yeah. How much is the Blu-ray?
The recommended retail price for the Amazon exclusive one's like 8,000 yen. With pre-order discount, it's just over 6,000. So I would presume that the regular version would be about 7,000 and drop down to about 5,000 something, going from experience, but I could be wrong. 5 to 6,000 with pre-order discount.
5 to 6,000. Well, no, I'm not going to get a pre-order discount. I was thinking I might be able to buy it in store when I'm over there.
Oh.
Kind of cool. Be kind of cool to just own one, just for the.
It's got that huge box that we've shown.
You might actually be able to grab one on secondhand by the time you get here, too.
Right.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. I might do that.
The box is huge. It's really nice. I think it fits 3 volumes in it. I have to check.
I'm only going to get the one just because I can.
But more importantly, Adrian, the most important piece of merchandise came out. It's chocolatey and kind of crunchy and comes with a trading card.
Oh, it's not chocolatey.
Isn't it?
No, it is not. Actually, I have it right here.
And what are we talking about?
Just pull, like, this is like Felix bag. You hear that?
You're smashing the mic.
This should be great. We'll start to talk about episode 17 by the time we get to discussing things. It'll be awesome.
No, there's not chocolate. It is actually the vanilla crisp wafer with metallic cards.
And this is a promotional thing they've done for Evangelion quite often as well. Well, not promotion, but like a thing they've brought out for plenty of other anime. But the cards, you lucked out. You got that Tengen-drawn pre-teaser.
Actually, it's a double-sided card of the both.
Oh, wow. Both the key visuals.
Yeah.
First one and the fourth one. Wow. Damn.
And the Mikimo one, which is cool, but it's not...
Double-sided?
No, it's not Akina.
Okay.
Sorry, it's not best girl.
Yeah.
So. It's there you go.
But yeah, let's get started, shall we?
All right. So, episode 16, guys. I've got to say, look, I stand by what I said last week about the opening. I'm still not sold on it as an opening. However, just after we recorded last week, they released the promotional video, or should I say 2/3 of the promotional video of just the girls dancing to it. I think it works really well as a Walkure song. But I'm still not sold on it that it's powerful enough to hold the opening as such. I'm sure I'll get used to it, but
yeah. I will agree with you on that one. I'm not too keen on the opening yet. Right. But then I didn't like the first one for ages either, and it grew on me.
Yeah,
so.
It needed its moment in the story before it became something that people really loved, the first opening. So maybe the second opening might need something like that to get people to really get into it.
Yeah. So we open up here after the stinger last week about the pilot that had been rescued, having known Hayate's dad. We open up with back on that same scene, and the pilot turns to Arad and he's like, "Look, what are you doing with that guy's kid?" It seems to be that there's some really negative thing has happened regarding Hayate's father. We still don't know the details. Well, we just know that, what was it? Arad said to him, I knew your father. And Hayate's like, well, why didn't you tell me? He's like, well, we were pilots together and you didn't ask. So.
It seems to be a kind of conflicted. I don't know if I'd say it's necessarily overall negative. This scene is negative, but when later on Arad's visiting him in the hospital, and then later at the very end when he's. Hayatus is telling me about my father. I get the impression that he did something that was, unsavory, but he did it for the right reasons.
Hmm.
I'm wondering if he's the VF-22 pilot who dropped the bomb, if it is indeed Nuns who dropped the bomb, and I 100% believe it is.
Hmm.
But I, if it is, I wonder if he's the pilot, because that would kind of make him. You know, he did the right thing, well, did the wrong thing, but for the right reasons, or... I don't know. I just wondered about that. Because it didn't seem a flat-out negative emotional moment, I thought.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, we then skip to the Ragu Nyanyan, where Freya is working in her best Nyanyan dress. And Makino and Reina have come up with a plan, a surprise party plan, for Freya's birthday. So we're looking at a birthday episode here going forward. And look, that's kind of a Macross tradition. We had one in the original Macross. It was a Sweet 16. This one, Freya's turning 15, which is a year younger, but then again, of course, by Windermere standards, means she's hitting middle age.
Didn't we have a birthday in... I thought Frontier did as well. Seven did.
Frontier, wasn't that the one where Ranka baked the salty cookies, but Cheryl offered Alto a trip, like some flight time?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. In Seven, isn't there like a birthday party for Mylène?
I'm pretty sure there is. I've forgotten, and Renato is going to kill me for saying that. So,
I think there is.
So they're cooking up this plan. We switch to the bridge where Arad, Johnson, Kaname, and Mikomo. Why is Mikomo on the bridge? Who let her in? But they're discussing Windermere and what they've been up to. And what they've been up to is not much. Windermere hasn't really moved yet on their plan to take over the galaxy. Kaname's hypothesis is that the output of the Song of the Wind may require time, given that it's using an amplifier, until it and the machine can be used again. So while Windermere is preparing, she and Mikomo think that it's a good plan to try to find somewhere with ruins with a similar system to that appeared on Ragnar. And Mikomo thinks that if she can use that to get in touch with Hinds or whoever the Singer of the Wind is while they're recharging per se and while everything's getting set up, they're still relatively weak. She thinks that she can take him on. She actually says she thinks she can take him on. However, there's no guarantee that this will work, so Kaname suggests they research the ruins and this system that appears in the meantime. But that's really all they mention of it in this episode. We don't really know what planet they're heading to do this, and we don't really know when it's going to happen. It's a bit different to earlier episodes where you hear something like this and then bang, we'd switch the scene and we'd be there. But that, I'm presuming, is what we'll get next episode. Greg, did you have anything you want to jump in on that, or are we good?
No. What?
I'm tense. I'm sitting here waiting for you to pounce.
oh, because I... No. Like, I know... the fundamental disagreement I had was that you keep saying that it's slow and that nothing is happening.
No, I didn't say that.
And this episode...
I said it lost momentum.
Yeah, but you assumed... Well, yeah, unless 97 things happened, you were like, it's lost momentum. Whereas the last two episodes have had tons and tons of... plot development. Tons of it. Just no jets shot each other.
No, plot development's not necessarily momentum. It can set things up without going anywhere. But look, this is... let's save this for the end. After we get through the plot, at least. So, we then switch to Hayate and Mirage, who are out looking for a birthday present for Freya. And this sets them up as this kind of a pseudo-date scenario, and they're doing some shopping together. Chuck, Makina, and Reyna are tailing this date such that it is, and that's kind of funny. There's one point where Hayate and Mirage are looking at pendants, and Chuck and Makina are doing a voiceover of their conversation, and it was really good. Chuck's voice was amazing. I wouldn't have known it was Chuck until they showed it was him. It was really cool.
That was a very funny sequence.
I thought, that was pretty neat. And the interesting thing is here, Mirage comes straight out and asks Hayate if he likes Freya. Now, given what we know about Mirage, I put this down to the fact that she's never been in a relationship, something that we knew going into the series, but she says shortly after this. But, I mean, guys, what did you all think when this question popped? Because I was like, hey, this isn't supposed to come up until, like, the last few episodes. And boom, she just kind of plopped it out there.
I think that sounds like it's got a fair bit of momentum going, wouldn't you, Gwyn?
even the characters mentioned that. They're like, oh, she just came right out and said it. So, I mean, it's starting to become obvious to everybody else that, Mirage has a crush on Hayate, or has feelings for him anyway. And, Makina mentioned, she said, oh, yeah, he's so dense, because, everybody else can see it except for Hayate, which is, you know, standard anime trope. But, you know, it's just funny that she came right out and said it. I was really, it kind of took me off guard. I was like, wow, she just came out and just hit him with it. Right. And of course, he didn't know how to answer. Mm-hmm. But later in the, I think by her asking that question,
yes.
I think he starts, once he, well, later in that scene, you can see when Freya starts singing, her song reaches him. And then I think all those questions kind of culminate at the end of the episode. Then he kind of realizes, like, oh, hey, maybe I do kind of like her, but.
Oh yeah, she totally stuffed herself like that. She got him to think about it, and that was the worst thing because he went, "Oh, maybe I do."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's how do I put it? I got the feeling with this scene that Mirage's past, which I'm hoping we get some of at some point. It almost seems like she's been raised like Gamelin. Like, she really has no idea what dating someone's like. Or I get the feeling that she may have actually had these feelings longer. She just doesn't know what they are, and therefore doesn't recognize them for what they are. And that's why she's having this reaction she didn't think she'd have. To
that could be her Zentradi Miltrandi gene coming through.
Could be.
She doesn't know how to handle it.
Could be. And so there's a conversation later I'll get into as well I thought might clarify that, but they chose not to. But
Is that where she talks about how he has the freedom of choice?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember if that was now or later. Okay, because I was thinking about that conversation too.
But
The other thing is, based on, I mean, the rest of the group, like Megumi and Reina and Chuck, they all presumably, I mean, they know that Freya is a part, like, you know, they were all like, oh, she came out and said it. So they're not, no one's surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they all knew that both of them liked Hayate, but they set her up with Mirage, does that mean they were all like rooting for Mirage over Freya in the contest of champions?
Not necessarily. I think if you go back to what they did with Nessa and Kaname as well in episode 10, it's sort of like they just want. I don't know.
They just want something to happen. They don't care who it happens with.
Maybe. I mean, the one in episode 10 explained it. We want Messer to have some good memories before he leaves, but don't know about this one. Was it really set up?
Or did they just tag along? Yeah.
Well, they seem to be like, I mean, all along it's felt like they were kind of rooting for, I guess they're kind of rooting for both of them. They just want romance. Maybe Reina and Megumi don't want to be the only couple in the show.
Who's Megumi, dude?
Yeah.
You're insulting.
Okay, I could have sworn I heard Gwyn say it, and so I was like, I'm really bad with names, so I was trying to copy him. It's
you got to remember Megumi, Makina. Thighs, Makina, intelligence.
Makina.
What?
No. I knew that Makina was the redhead. I had that one down this time.
Red?
Pink.
It's
pink.
Red.
Pink. Pinkish red.
Red?
It's kind of red. It's more red than
Mirage's.
Look, this
hair
isn't important.
Is a shade of red.
Well, yeah, there's a word for light red.
Wait.
Pink.
I'm thinking of Kaname. Kaname's just red, right?
Yeah.
The leader of Valkyrie. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. What did I say? You know what? This isn't important. Reina and the big boob girl didn't want to be the only couple of the show, and so they were, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think at the end, you know, they all seem, and we'll, you know, we'll get to this, but they don't seem to have any problem with a Hayate Freya matchup. But, you know, I'm probably reading too much into it, but the way they immediately tag along after Mirage, I think it's just that they know her personality. And they're like, she obviously doesn't know.
Yeah, I think
she needs help.
You can kind of give a, like, if you want to look at it in like a Western sense, it's they know she's this girl that's by the book. They've flown with her. They know how she lives her life. And it's basically the group that actually has been around her, like your regular friends, kind of feel they know what's best for you.
Mm.
And
yeah.
They're kind of, you know, saying everything out loud. And they're not noticing Freya because Freya is the newest one to the group.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
From a Japanese perspective, I guess they could also be a bit of that. Well, technically, Freya shouldn't be getting together with anyone if she's going to be an idol. But then again, increasingly I get the feeling Valkyria doesn't act like a regular idle unit with those restrictions, because they're, you know, they're a tactical sound unit. They battle, and they've got a couple right there within the unit, for crying out loud, you know, with Makina and Ray Ray. So who knows? But that was a great scene, I thought. It was well done, and Hayate's reply was really... He hadn't thought about it himself, right? So he was like, oh, I don't know, she's a friend? No, she's not a friend. Oh, she's a comrade? Yeah, kind of. And he comes down to, basically, well, she's fun to hang around with, and interesting stuff happens when we're together. Which, you know, immediately in my head, I had a flashback to the one of the Evangelion movies, when in one of the newer ones, where... Asuka asks Rei in the elevator if she likes Shinji, and Rei's just like, my heart goes boom boom, so I want him to feel like boom boom as well. And Asuka's just like, idiot, that just means you like him. So I just had the exact scene pop into my head seeing this. You know, it's like someone needs to slap Hayate and go, no, what you just said is you like her.
Well, I think that's what he's coming to the realization of, especially by the end of the episode.
Right. Well, you know, things got pretty pervy at the end of the episode too, so... But we'll get to that. So meanwhile, on Windermere, Royd's made preparations to do a test to amplify the output of the Windsong. They want to carry out this test before UN Spacey can gather their forces and counterattack or do a preemptive strike. Hines agrees to the test. It's going to put great stress on him, but he agrees to it regardless. It's interesting to see here how, in a way, Royd and Keith's roles almost seem to be a little bit reversed to what
I was going to mention that exact thing.
Well, go ahead.
No, you got it. I was going to say, I 100% agree with you.
Because, you know, Keith is one like, are you sure? You're going to be all right? And Royd's like, you know, okay, you said yes, let's do it. Yeah, it's like Royd now with the king out of the way and his plans in full motion, I think he's dropping some of the pretense of caring.
Which is weird, because some of the times that he was caring, it wasn't in like a situation where it was required as a pretense. Like, I genuinely thought he gave a shit. But yeah, this episode gave pause to that idea for sure.
Right.
I was really surprised by it, actually. It stood out to me in the episode.
Hmm. In the meantime, there's dissent among the ranks and the Aerial Knights over this whole war thing. You know, I mean, Kasim is kind of against it. The twins are for it. Hellman does his usual, haha, whatever, I'm old, I can act weird. Happy-go-lucky kind of... His attitude just makes me laugh, because he's always just like, haha, whatever. Even in battle, episode one, he just laughed when, like, Keith just shot past him.
I think Herman might be my favorite of the Knights.
I think he's gradually going senile. I think that's got to be it. That's the only way you can explain his happy-go-lucky attitude.
Well, he's 36. It's what happens to us.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand.
but yeah, descent in the ranks. So, will, you know, Kasim die an honorable death to prevent war, or will someone defect? We don't know, but there seems to be some small seed of something like that, potentially.
Bogue seemingly just wants to murder things, I'm pretty sure, is his motivation at this point.
Well, hasn't that always been his motivation?
Well, yes, but it hasn't changed. Like, the others are debating philosophy, and I think he's just wondering why he's still there talking and not killing things.
So that happens, and then back at the fleet, Freya is just kind of randomly singing, and it seems to have this effect on Hayate. It kind of makes him almost black out. He certainly seems to have some kind of...
Yeah. Fleet.
It's very odd, and he's never shown this kind of reaction before. Could it be a different effect because he's realized his feelings for her, or he's coming to realize his feelings for her? I don't...
Well, he grabs his pendant, so obviously the full quartz started resonating.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we know that when Freya is in touch with her emotions, when she's feeling deeply about something, whether it's fear or stress or, you know, love or loneliness or whatever, anytime she's in touch with her feelings, that's what sets off her fold. What do they call it? Her
resonance.
They had a term for it. I forget. But then that's what causes the pendant. Well, Hayata's pendant to resonate as well, because it is full quartz, obviously. So I just think that normally, he feels it when they're in battle, and he uses it to ride the wind, as they say. But when he's just out walking around, I don't think he knows how to. It's never done that when they're not in battle. You know what I mean? So this is the first time he's like felt it.
Right.
Just, out and about.
Yeah, no, agreed. It certainly seemed to come out of left field.
Mm.
Yeah, it was weird. While Freyr is singing, however, Mikamori does come up behind her and starts asking her about Windermere, and it pretty much seems really obvious at this point that Mikamori has been on Windermere and has sung there at some point in the past. Those dreams we've been getting bits and pieces of, right?
Only sort of remembering it.
Yeah, it's like it's she remembers having been there, but not like she seems almost
the context for it.
Yeah, the context, the emotions, I guess, Craig.
Some sort of like either the emotions or the like. She's like, I remember singing on this stage, but I don't necessarily know how that connects to anything else.
Mm.
There's something she says a bit later in the episode that made me stop, like it made me pause and just think what the implications were for what she actually is or her memories in particular. So we can get to that later, though, when we get to towards the end of the episode.
I think I know what you're getting at, Chris. Is it the birthday comment?
Yeah, that's what I was
saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all thought the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I can't be the only one who believes she's a protoculture, like some sort of protoculture spirit, right? I've put this to Gwyn multiple times. He thinks I'm nuts.
So you get halfway through that sentence and it's making sense. I mean, something potentially connected to the protoculture or something an artificially engineered being or something to do with an alien race, fine. But when you get into spirits and energy beings, that's when we have to agree to disagree.
I have this theory that she's not really like, she's there, but she's not like entirely physical. And that's how she appears and disappears in different places and always seems to know where she is and doesn't seem to live anywhere and hangs around naked underwater or naked up on mountains and stuff. She's just sort of going where she wants to go.
So it's like she's an EMH program.
Yeah, but she's not like a holo. She's like the some sort of remnant of the protoculture. She's some sort of, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but she's a remnant of the past. She's a memory or an echo of some kind.
Okay,
that's my theory.
Again, my theory is like I definitely agree she isn't human, but I think there's a middle ground there, which is maybe not quite as out there as your theory, Craig. But we'll. I've been proven wrong nearly every time before, so.
I think she's half proto-dev. She's half proto-Devlin.
That would be
awesome. I like it. Yeah, actually, I hadn't really put it together, but by disagreeing with me, that means that because Gwyn is almost always automatically wrong, I'm probably right.
There you go. You owe me one.
That's the whole yin and yang we got here, because I'm usually right.
Usually?
Do you agree with me?
Do I agree with you? I think you're.
Because if you're usually right, Gwyn's usually wrong, then we should be fine.
I think you're on to something. I just don't think it's the obvious. Like, I think it's going to be something out of left field, but I think you're more in the direction of maybe it's going to be something that
I knew I liked
haven't
you,
seen before.
Yeah, I think left field is fine. The problem is Craig's two blocks down the road from left field. That's my.
Here we go.
but anyway. Let's get back to this whole plot thing I'm talking about here. We go back to Hayate and Mirage who are talking. This is a conversation, Craig, I think we're going to talk about earlier, where he kind of mentions that he's disappointed to have found out his father was a pilot because, he'd done all this soul-searching and traveling to find a place to belong, and in the end he ended up choosing the same thing as his father. But Mirage's whole thing was, he didn't know about his father, so that doesn't mean anything. You know, this is what he chose, and he came to it of his own volition. And talks a little bit about the freedom of choice. I expected her to jump in at this point and talk about maybe piloting or the military being a family tradition for her, and that how she had this lineage of, you know, of family members and ancestors all being soldiers. But it just didn't go anywhere, that conversation. Like, I expected it to go back on her.
I just took that as it was subtext, because I read it that way, that that's what she was, like, she was definitely thinking then, because she says it's not that simple all the time. You're right, I was thinking exactly along those lines, but I didn't bother me that she didn't come out and say it, because to me that was the subtext of what she was saying, and it goes into her character, like, that fits everything, that, you know, her whole, to me, Mirage's kind of big character trait is not feeling good enough, like, not living up to her legacy.
Well, I guess, yeah, from a general audience perspective, you're spot on, Craig, I guess, because she's mentioned her grandparents previously. From a fan perspective, there's just a missing link there. It's like, we don't know enough about Miranda, her mother, to know. Because, you know, Milene had part of a strict upbringing, but then she rejected it. And then Mirage is one generation removed, so we have heard nothing of her mother necessarily being a pilot, so ostensibly she'd be more removed from that strict upbringing. And so that's why I was surprised to hear her say that. So I was like, all right, we've got to hear a bit more about her upbringing. But I guess as far as a general viewer is concerned, all they've heard about are her grandparents and their great legacy, so I guess they're making that direct connection without worrying about the link.
I don't think it's so much about being brought up in the legacy as the history of it. Like, I mean, you don't have to be raised a certain way to feel the weight of your family's choices and your family name.
True, but I'd argue you do have to be as, like, you know, emotionless as she is.
But she's not emotionless at all.
Well, she doesn't know what her emotions are. I mean, you know, to not have that amount of familiarity with emotions, that says to me she's been raised in a certain way.
I don't even know if I agree with it. She doesn't understand her own emotions.
I'm pretty sure she doesn't. I think thanks to Hayate, she really learned how it felt to lose and what frustration was really like and how to challenge herself. There's all these things that she's never really seemed to have. I mean, she's really closed in and has never had any relationships. That much we know from, like, her profile.
Okay. You can't. I don't think you should count her profile. I don't think that. I think that's not.
Yeah, Ken, that's official set there. That's the setting materials for the show. It's like opening a gold book and saying that it doesn't count. Adrian,
don't bring me into this.
Okay.
Because I'll just say something.
I was going to say, I just now feel like I could keep going, but I feel like it's the two of us arguing.
Do I really need to go into, like, Bogue's sisters, and now we find out they're dead, and, like, all I heard about was Bogue's sister this, Bogue's sister's that. It's like, Gwyn likes to see into the future, but the future always changes, so.
Yeah, but at least, you know, there are references to these things they never follow up on.
No, but, I mean, they're references. They're not a guide to tell you where the show's going.
No, I get that.
That's right.
But they exist.
You shouldn't need... Supplementary material should add to the primary text.
We've had this conversation before, Craig, but these aren't supplementary materials because they were released to promote the show, to bring people up to speed with the show, and they're constantly updated each episode. So they are... It's like they release a glossary of terms. They have the character profiles with them. It's just... It's additional information, but it's not supplementary by it's not tertiary to this, by any means.
Totally disagree. Novel. Anything that is not the show is secondary information.
Now, we are talking about materials that spelt Mirage's name wrong, by the way.
Did they? Well, I guess we'll see on further down the track when we get more materials. But, so, where were we at? We had that discussion between the two of them. Didn't get much about Mirage's background. Hayate suddenly thinks of a good present and splits. So we flash over then to Arad and the pilot, and I flick briefly through the credits. I think the pilot's name is Robert. If it's the only name in the credits I didn't recognize. They're in hospital, and there's this brief talk about, let me think here, what was it? It was about how Hayate can't be told the truth, but he'll have to know it eventually. What was going on? Arad was showing him the footage of the bomb going off. So,
was followed by him saying, you're going to have to tell him the truth. That's why I wondered if his father was the one who dropped the bomb. Okay.
Yeah, it seems like such an obvious setup at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but anyways, we then finally get to this birthday party, and surprise, Frey had forgotten her own birthday. And they do this party, Mikomo turns up, and they sing the most Christmas-sounding birthday song I have ever heard.
I was going to ask if that was some sort of Japanese birthday song that...
No, it's not. Because if you go just to made that up Fridays, you'll hear the Japanese birthday song every 10 minutes here in Japan. It's not even the Japanese one, it's just the one you always hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's a very Christmas-sounding song, this thing. It was kind of strange. Original, unique, but different.
I actually kind of liked it.
I thought it started off strange, but it got good. I actually was having like nightmare flashbacks of Merry Christmas Without You at Budokan. I was like, oh gosh.
I was going to say some Mariah Carey, Adrian.
No, I think you're thinking Gira Gira Sama, which is the song I loathe. But when I went to the Christmas concert, I wanted to go to Macross concert, and instead I heard this funky, really...
Oh, the Christmas songs?
Yeah, those are horrible. Oh. And I thought they were going there, but that song ended up being pretty good.
Mm. In the lead-up, by the way, a really tiny point I thought was funny. They're dashing around to prepare for the party, and Arad was just sitting on his bum the whole time, which I thought was hilarious, because Mirage is like, come on, Commander, get off your butt, do something. And he's just sitting there, and even then when they threw the surprise and everyone screams out happy birthday, and if you look at Arad, he doesn't even open his mouth. So he's just
I noticed that.
He's just slacking off the whole time. He's just like, yeah, whatever. My underlings are just doing their thing. I'm sitting here, I'm going to get cake. That's all good. His attitude was just really making me laugh. I thought it was great. So Frey gives a bit of a speech. She gets a cake. Oh, by the way, I don't know if anyone looked at that cake. It had a little chibi Frey on it.
No, I didn't notice
that. It was really cute. It was really tiny, mixed in with the fruit. It was darn cute, and I think after gets...
Oh, yeah, okay, I see. that is cute.
So Freya gives a bit of a speech, talking about how, she's from a small village, so the war 7 years back didn't really affect her all that much. She came into contact with Earth music, and when she was young, back around those days, like 7 years back, and then... Whenever anything tough happened, it's like whenever anything tough happened, like dad dying or mum dying, she'd sing.
No, she says, actually, well, I don't know.
She says that when I was going to ask you about the wind, but
Taken by the Wind, which I actually thought was a really cool, the wind is everywhere in this damn show, but I kind of like that turn of phrase. I think the subtitles is something like when they went to the wind or joined the wind or something like that.
Right. Well,
I really liked that turn of phrase.
It was obviously a euphemism for, them either dying
of course.
They ate a can of baked beans and went with the wind.
Wow. So, way to suck the gravity out of that.
Yeah, I know, right? So we do get a nice little flashback to young Freya singing like on a rooftop on a chimney stack or something. I've got to say though, if she burst out into song in front of the whole town whenever there was like anything bad happening, she must have been the most annoying damn kid.
Like, well, all the adults kind of are looking confounded, but all the kids are grinning at her.
Right. Probably the most in that flashback, the most generic Windermerian villagers we see, right? We see everyone with their runes and just chilling while watching her sing.
I think so.
Which is good, because, no, that's the most of the villages we've seen outside the manga, where they've got a bunch of them. So, well, they did.
There's a couple of burnt-out buildings in that village, too.
Right.
At least one of the houses is like hollowed out.
Hmm. Yeah, no, they do show that. Which is weird, because she said the war didn't really affect her all that much, right? So...
I think she said it didn't affect them much, but it still did affect them, so it was still bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not as bad as the worst, but they still felt it.
And how does that work? Because we've seen her, she was standing right next to that bomb when it went off in a previous flashback. Didn't affect us much. I just stood here and...
Was she? I thought she was just... Don't you just see her in front of, like, a glowing fire? Do you actually see her in front of the...
Well, she's in front of the explosion. Like, she's close enough.
Oh, that's true. When you see it the other way around.
Yeah, like, she was...
Maybe she wasn't in the village? Maybe she was somewhere else at the time?
Or is this a Ranker scenario where she's, like, you know, blocked stuff out mentally?
No. Like, no, I'm just saying, like, we don't know that her family was killed at the village. Maybe they were on a trip or they were at another village selling something or whatnot. Like, I mean, you're probably right. I think it's just a slip-up, but...
Well,
it could be. There's an easy way to, like, talk around it.
The fact that she listed her mother and father dying separately makes me think they'll be probably just of old age.
That's true, actually. Yeah, fair enough.
Just the fact that one of the first flashbacks we get of her, she seemed relatively close to the explosion. And then she's like, the war didn't affect us that much. And it's like, whoa, something's not gelling here.
Well, the war didn't... I mean, if you look at it that way, that bomb could have been the end of the war. So the war didn't affect them until that was it, and then, you know, that ended it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, yeah, they apparently lost a lot of people when that bomb went off. But, well, look, I guess, you know, things will be revealed eventually. We then get to Hayato's big surprise present, which was a snowman.
Sorry. Just one little moment I thought was cool before that, when she says, I turned 15 today, which is the midway point of my life, and Hayate's expression just kind of drops for a second, like he's smiling when he comes in, and when she says that, his face kind of drops, like he's pretty sad for a second, and then it kind of goes back to normal, and I thought that would be hard to think about, wouldn't it, like... You know, if especially if he is starting to have feelings for her, that he's like, at best, they've got, you know, maybe 17 years before she dies of old age. And he'd be mid-30s.
It's cool that you brought that up, Craig, because I actually thought, you know, at the end of the episode when Mirage is getting all sad and I'm starting to feel bad for her. I'm like, you know, that sucks because she's starting to grow on me. I like her as a character. I'm like, well, wait a minute. In this scenario, everyone can win. Because just by the time... because Hayate can get with Freya now, and then when she drops off in, like, 15 years, then Mirage, he could, like, spend the rest of the time with Mirage, and everybody wins.
Holy shit.
And Zentrons don't age that rapidly, right?
Right, see, so that he gets both of them in their prime. It's like perfect.
That is the most callous.
God.
Oh my god, dude.
Hey, Mike, they're both his wings. They're just not both his wings at once.
It's like, or
exactly.
Yet, you know, or better yet, maybe there's like a Mormon Island 3 or something, and they could just move there and just all live together.
Hey, well, Mirage and Freya already live together, man. So you got two out of three already, you know.
Oh my!
They're already sister wives.
Between you and Gwyn, you guys just suck all the gravity out of this show. Freya's parents have now died of baked beans, and it's okay, Mirage. Be sad because in 15 years your rival will die of old age, and you can have him anyway. Holy shit. Sorry, I just swore again. Sorry.
Someone was going to say it. I've been expecting that for like God knows how many episodes for someone to say it. Something if I needed. Anyway.
What, just wait.
Oh, the 15-year thing. There's 15 years more so we can get by. I was expecting someone to say that.
It's a shame that Alto didn't have that option, because then the ending of the TV series would have worked, wouldn't it? Kind of.
No. There's no question.
God.
With Cheryl
it's
by
a
Andy
failed Peterson. Plot device from leftover from Frontier.
Yeah. So Hayate's big present is a snow machine, so it gives Freya a taste of home. And something I immediately thought of, which then what was happening on screen bore out, was that, yeah, for Chuck's kid brothers and sisters, this would have been their first time to see snow. Because, it didn't look like Ragnar had snow. Not as far as we knew, at least. So I was like, yeah, they probably haven't had much snow, if any. And they're like, hey, it's our first time. And they're making snowballs and stuff, which was neat. And then, of course, we have the big moment, such that it is between Hayate and Freya, where he's looking at her and she's all glowing and he touches her glowing thingy and she doesn't slap him.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yep.
Yeah.
So
she welcomed it.
Just the tone. Just the tone in his voice.
I really like this romance now. Like, I was kind of on Mirage's side for a long time, but they've built Freya and Hayate just slowly enough that I'm kind of buying them as a as a couple getting together more. Like, I'm starting to really fall for that couple. And I really liked the ending of this episode, the whole way it played out, right down to the sad Mirage tear. I just thought it was all really, really well done.
Well, so we have that moment, and Carice, what was your take on that moment? Him poking her room. That came out wrong.
It's more like the room poking him.
It was, almost. It was so big and bulbous and pink.
Wait. Oh my god.
So yeah, Carice, what was your take on that scene?
I mean, in general, I think I agree with Craig. I just really like the episode. And I guess that seemed to be the point where Hayate actually really realized that maybe he does feel something more for her. Like, that seemed to be the very point he realized it. Because she stopped. Because, as you said, she didn't, turn around and slap him for touching her rune. So I just really liked the episode in general.
So I actually think the part of the show that stood out to me the most happened right around this point, which was Kaname and Arad, because there's a glance so they're there watching this snow and they're physically not standing together. They're close but not together, and it's obvious they want to be staying together. She looks at him, he looks at her, and there's just this look as like, what, Mike? That was an amazingly animated face, because the look, it was like the ghost of Messer is stopping us from getting together.
And that's
I was just thinking, but you know, I always got the feeling she thought of Messer as, you know, more of a younger brother or a Kohai, right? So because she always called him Messer Kun. So if Messer was alive, Arad and Kaname would probably have been together in that scene, but because he's dead, it's awkward.
I didn't read it that way. I read them as both thinking about Messer, but not in a, like, I think Kaname was always in love with Messer, and I thought, I took that as, I've always felt like Arad and Kaname were just kind of comrades, like, I mean, I know she's not a guy, but brothers in arms kind of a vibe, and I took that as a mutual, because the other thing that's interesting is that's the first point in the scene where you see the Elysium, and it's framing it with a military mech in between them, so I took it as remembering Messer, but also in a, like, the war took him away kind of moment, and we both miss him in our own way. But I took it as shared remembrance, not he's the thing standing between us, or the ghost of him is standing between us.
Very, very interesting, very different interpretation of that. I'm on the side that he is in between them and not preventing them getting together. Like, I'm on that side. I must admit, like, listening to the radio show may have influenced that a bit, because the seiyuu, the voice actors, actually do come out and talk about what they think Kaname actually felt for Messer and Arad. They actually do go into that there, and the girls especially came out very clearly on the side that she's always looking at Arad.
I actually remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would go at the show, previous shows that Arid and Johnson were hiding the fact that Messer was, you know, being tested, you know, to his limits, and she didn't like the fact that that was the case. Mm-hmm. So, wouldn't she feel betrayed by Arid at this point? Like,
that's a good point. That's a good point.
I can't really see her having a relationship with Arid, knowing what she knows now about what they did with Messer.
I always took it as a friendship. Like, they're kind of the burdens of leadership that they both share.
Well, but even, like, Machina and Reyna, back in the Jellyfish Festival, they just said, Arid. They're like, no, she always liked Arid.
Well, they said they think that, yes.
Well,
and look, you may be right. Like, I don't know. I think you can read it both ways, certainly. I never felt that between them. Whereas I felt Messer and Kaname quite strongly.
Mm-hmm.
I had a conversation
on a romantic level
earlier today.
Did you?
Yes,
oh.
I did.
Go ahead, Carice.
Oh, no, like, I just, in the early scenes, like, earlier part of the series, like, one thing to me, I guess, was the flirting over the jellyfish snacks. To me, that was flirting. Because it happened about twice.
I'm the only one who feels it, so maybe I'm wrong. Like, I never read it that way. Especially if the voice actors were saying it was kind of played out romantically, then, yeah, all right, cool. I just never got the vibe. But, I mean, if that's what they're going for, all right, cool, sweet. I buy it. I believe it.
That moment was really well animated, I thought. They got a lot across in a 2D glance. Arid talks to Hayate a bit about his father very briefly. He says his father was a great pilot who saved his butt more than a few times, but that he was also too kind, which could be something to do with the whole bomb situation or whatever it was happened. And the most important thing, of course, was the fact that in this whole thing, Heathcliff lives on in the shape of a snow mercat.
I got people tweeting me, still saying it's Garfield, but...
Yeah.
But the guy that's saying that is pretty knowledgeable in Macross, I will say, right, Mike?
That is correct.
So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He just hasn't listened to all our episodes yet.
Yes.
And yeah, we get the single tear from Mirage, which was a great way to end it. And a lot of great character moments in this episode, but let's open it up. Finally, that plot's out the way. I've got to let Renato do this next week.
I want to go into a couple things that I've noticed and I want to throw out there. First off, Hayate's father and the dropping the bomb thing. Has anybody even thought of the idea that because they're saying his father was a kind person, good man, that if he was behind this flight stick and dropped the bomb, that he could have been under early experimentation of the VAR, controlled VAR, and been made to do it under my control?
By the Windermerians? By the Windermerians?
By the Windermerians.
That's interesting.
You know, because they all thought that VAR was all uncontrolled until they had the Vaccine Live concert.
Right.
We know that?
Yeah, because, I mean, they would have kept that secret that, I would assume, they would keep a secret that they can control them to where they can fly Valkyries or actually carry out missions under VAR control. So,
Do we know why Hayate's father is dead?
Yeah, Hayate said he was dead. Like, in episode
14? I couldn't remember. Like, did he die? Like, could the bomb have killed him? Like, could he have died at that point? Or do we know that he was alive later than 7 years ago?
We don't know.
I'm trying to remember, because he said he got something. Because I thought at one point early on he says, the last time I heard from him was blah, blah, blah. But I don't remember when it... I might be misremembering that. So I just wonder if he survived. Because going by your theory, Adrian, which I like, he was either killed by the explosion, he's still on Windermere somewhere, or he snapped out of it and went back to Nuns, which would mean he's... And then he died on some other mission somewhere. Unless he's, like, alive and in prison or something. Like, because if they could control people by the Var and they didn't want people to know, they could just put out the story that he died and still have him somewhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that seems complicated.
It just because the Nuns might see him as a traitor, but... like, Arad and everyone that knows him probably believe he would never do that. And the Windermerians, or the ones that are behind it on Windermere, if that's the case, you know, they're just covering it up.
Hmm.
That's... I mean...
I like this theory.
I don't usually dive into those kind of things, but that was something that hit me by watching it the last couple of days, because I actually had to catch up on the last two episodes, and then this one after getting back last week, and then listening to you guys on the podcast. So it was the one thing I saw that I didn't see anybody or hear anyone bring it up.
Okay. No, that's an interesting theory. I mean, because there have been, you know, the Var's been around for at least, what year did it start? 5 years, a minimum of 5 years by the time Delta opens. So... It's very possible. Yeah. Was that the main point you wanted to bring up?
That's the main point regarding that, and then I was going to talk about Mirage, Freya, the triangle there. And I think the one thing that you see on screen in the very first half of the episode is they're going shopping looking for a present for Freya, and Mirage is pulling up regular type gifts on her phone, like what girls would like, charms, this makeup, that, and for other people. I don't even think she'd buy it for herself. And then they start looking at necklaces, and it's all about what do we get her, and you can tell, like, Hayate's like, nah, none of this. And then he does the snow thing, right? And I think that's what has to do with her crying. I don't think she's visually seeing them getting together. It's not that. It's that she sees that her and Hayate's connection is deeper, because Hayate got her something that would make her feel like back home, cause her to become emotional. And I think that's what's pulling at her heartstrings. That's what's making her emotional. That
their connection.
She sees that there's something there, that it's not a physical attraction, it's just Hayate knows her. But on the flip side of that, it's because, like, of, you know, the Fold Crystal, he has that connection, he has that feeling, which he got in the first episode, and then, which also happened on, was it Voldor? When he bested Rogue, that was Bogue.
Yep.
And because she was singing, and then her room was glowing. And he did the snow thing, and her room was glowing. So he feels the connection, and there's no battle going on. There's no energy, there's no rush of escape. It's the energy, Freya's energy, raw energy, and his connection. But they only have that connection because he's wearing the pendant.
Exactly.
Right.
So you think it's like almost like a hypnotic suggestion-y kind of, like?
It's not so much
like
that.
He's being.
It's just
his feelings aren't his own.
Like, something has to trigger the feeling between those two, so they're not probably really meant to be together. Where Mirage and Hayate are going out like a regular couple. And maybe they're not doing the most exciting things, but...
They went on the most Japanese date ever.
Yeah, they're probably... In Hayate's mind, he's probably actually on a date with Mirage.
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think he's... The way he goes about it, but, I mean, he's always with her now or whatever, takes her out
He's far too oblivious for that. I don't think it would even occur to him.
So,
incidentally, is Egan, are you awake? I just realized I haven't heard you say anything in like a half hour.
I'm still awake, preoccupied, still awake. Yeah,
just checking.
So, Egan, what was your any standouts for you from this episode?
I also caught that moment between Aaron and Kaname, and like you were saying about that moment when Hayate kind of, for lack of a better word, twitched when he thought about Freya's being at midlife. Other than that, yeah, I was surprised that we were getting another character episode and not getting to the action. But then when we got into it, I didn't mind it, especially towards the end when Hayate came up with his present idea and why it was perfect for Freya. But yeah, I enjoyed the episode overall.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know if we want to get into, is there any particular points people want to bring up?
I had one little premature
to jump into final impressions.
I had one more little moment that I thought was just kind of funny. Before, right at the end, when Hayate says to Arad, will you tell me about my father? Right before that, you see Freya's like running around the tree and Hayate's watching her, and it pans across to Arad and he's giving Hayate this, he's got this grin on his face looking at Hayate like, I see what you're doing, buddy. And then as soon as Hayate talks to him, he goes into like a more serious thing, but the grin he's giving him, that's like a Dewey kind of grin, is just, I thought that was really funny. And it's such an Arad thing to just be standing behind him doing it.
And Hayate blushed at that point, I think.
Yeah, he does. He blushes. He turns around and he's blushing. You're right. I didn't notice that, but he is. It's at 21:50 on the time. If you're curious, I should freak. Yeah, Arad's got like one eyebrow up and this grin, and it's very funny.
Overall, I really think they outdid themselves on the 2D character animation this episode. Like a lot of the expressions. The fact that they managed to get so much conveyed in relatively still shots, just I thought the art was really well done. Yeah.
So I want to get in and ask, talk on behalf of somebody really quick. And just going to say, our Lady S has sent some questions.
Okay.
And there's probably about five of them here, and I'll go down the list. It's, why is Chuck so unconcerned with his sister's missingness? Possible death. Missingness/possible death.
Okay.
So why is it he's so unconcerned? Anybody want to chime in on that?
I don't know. I think he's just kind of not thinking about it. Like, I don't think it's that he's not concerned. It's that he's not dwelling on it all the time.
Yeah.
He may be putting up a face for the kids.
Yeah. And then me and Mike were talking about that day before yesterday. It's all an act just for his brother and his sister. Brothers and sister.
Yeah.
You still there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here. Just listening. I agree. I was just about to mention that.
Although he's still being quite chirpy when he's following Mirage and Hayate around on their not date. And the kids aren't there then. I don't think. The kids aren't there, are they? No, it's just the three of them.
Okay, Lady S also says, despite incorrect pronunciation, Mikimo's song for Freya was very sweet. She also likes to say that I want to make sure I say this right. Dayumu, Mirage's outfit, is hot. And that she would want it. So does anybody know?
Which outfit?
Dayumu, Mirage's outfit.
I have no idea what that even means.
I don't know, but she, Lady S, is making me pronounce it a specific way.
I am guessing she's referring to the outfit that she was wearing when she was shopping. And I think it has something to do with, because she's wearing like a, it's like an off-the-shoulder blouse, but then she's got like a tie that's basically like a choker, but it's like a collar and tie that she's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a collar without anything attached to it, basically. So I think that might be what she's referring to.
Yeah, she's referring to the yellow outfit she was wearing. Yeah.
That's also what I thought she was referring to. Also, is Freya's root confirmed yet?
Is Freya's what?
Root.
Is Freya's root?
route.
Oh, you mean as in is the one true parent confirmed? Is that what she said?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You're like,
it's,
what,
it's
well,
a
like how she got
kind of term, I believe. Yeah, I think she's wanting to know if
right if people think Freya's pretty much it.
Do you guys think that? You think it's? I still say it's up.
I think it's up in the air, but I kind of feel it more with Freya and Hayate than I do Mirage and Hayate.
And finally, she ends with, "No, but seriously, everyone seems to be forgetting that Chuck's sister is probably dead somewhere. What the crap?"
I'm more worried about Heathcliff than Chuck's sister. He's got more personality.
I still think that because this is Macross, I still think when they go back to Ragna, she's going to show up.
I agree. Because in Macross, when you're dead, and you know it.
You're dead.
And when you're alive, you're alive.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's deep. That's this week with Lady S.
Okay, thank you for that, Lady S. We hope you message us again next week.
Yes.
Alright, let's jump into any final points or overall impressions people want to give. Mike, did you want
to...
Sure. Chris, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out two other things. Like, Mirage's phone, isn't that like... Kuru? Is it... How do you pronounce that?
It's the first time
Mirage's phone. Like, it's like that sneaker. Like, it's like the meerkat, the sea cat. Mm-hmm. That they have, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that one. And then also the, like, what I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Mikomo's, like, I don't remember anyone celebrating my birthdays. That bit.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah. So it just seems like it's just weird. Like, who is she? Has she lived a really, really, really long time, or has she got some kind of memory loss, or is she something else altogether? It's like, what does that mean? I don't have a memory of anyone celebrating my birthdays.
And it throws Kaname off too. She's like, wait, what?
Well, that line, here's my thought. We were kind of throwing out what everybody thought Mikomo was earlier, but I actually think that she's either like Grace from Frontier, or she's either like a cyborg, or she's like some kind of android or genetically engineered person. So that's why she wouldn't have a birthday, because she was created. Like, she was basically some kind of lab experiment. So when she said that, I was like, oh, so she wasn't born, she was made. That's what that line gave me, that thought.
What is the exact line? Like, it's translated as, nobody ever celebrated my birthday.
She doesn't remember anyone ever celebrating her birthday. Well, she doesn't have any memory of anyone celebrating her birthday.
Yeah.
Easy answer.
Adrian managed to offend two religions on the podcast today. Fantastic.
At least he didn't suggest that Mirage should wait until Freya's dead before he bones her.
Hey, that's the nice thing to do. Well, you want Freya to be alive when he leaves?
The whole thing is just, the whole concept is just messed up, Mike. I mean, damn it.
Baked beans for everyone. Baked beans for everyone.
They went with the wind.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what to make of the Mikomo thing. It's. Do you think? Could she be some sort of like Windermere? And this is so, I don't even believe this myself. Could she be some sort of like Windermerean goddess or something? And so she's like remembering people worshipping her, and that's why she remembers being on the stage, and like she was a proto. I don't know. But then why? Why would no one celebrate her birthday? Because no one who celebrates a goddess's, Christianity, Jesus.
The one thing we know for sure is that the only person in this show that is guaranteed to know who she is Arid, because he knows everything. He's just not spilling the beans fast enough on anything.
Johnson would know too.
Would he? Well, he was there when they put. He was involved in putting together Valkyria, so yeah, I guess. Yeah. Well, those two, they know.
Although Mikima wasn't in it from the start, we know that because remember, what's her name? Kaname was the lead singer into Mikima.
That's kind of true because I mean, if they're gonna let somebody that you know escape the borders of Windermere join, like, without asking, other than. You sure you want to join? You might now be able to go back to your planet.
Right, and if they have these auditions, if Mikomo got in by audition, there were questions asked. If she got in on a special allowance because she had some special power or ability, which meant she could forego the audition, then they obviously know something about what she is. So either way, someone's not talking, I guess is the point. But anyways, Carice, any final thoughts on the episode?
Not really. I think I've said it all. I just really, really liked this, especially after last week's episode. Mm-hmm. Yes. This one I'll watch again. Last week's one, maybe not.
I'm saving you, Craig, so hold on there. Mike, I know you got cut off originally.
Yeah, thanks, Gwen. So y'all kind of touched on points that I noticed throughout the episode. I agree, Gwen. The artwork with the character, there was a lot of nuance that I don't think we've really seen before, character wise, up till now. I mean, we've seen a lot of great like mecha animation, and you know, episode 13 was just awesomely animated in general. But for being a character-driven episode, there was a lot of nuance and just like little like things. Like I didn't even notice. I had the video playing in the background here while we're talking, and I didn't even notice the Hayate's face until Craig mentioned it, and then I went back and looked at it, and that was just another little touch that I noticed.
That was Corrine who noticed Hayate's face. I saw Arad, but I didn't see Hayate.
Oh yeah, sorry. Hayate's face. Yeah, when Freya was saying, "Oh yeah, I turned 15, and you know this is the halfway point of my life."
Oh, that point.
Right. Yeah. That, and then I just noticed that, and I was like, "Oh wow, that's." I mean, it's that just little things like that. Those really nice touches that made this an enjoyable episode for me. Again, it's because I think that. You know, we care about these characters that an episode like this is enjoyable, and which goes back to my point last week that even though there was some plot development and stuff, like we really don't give a crap. I don't anyway. I can't speak for everybody else, but I mean, the general feeling is we don't really give a crap about the Aerial Knights. So that episode for me was just like, okay, you know, whatever. And even though there was a lot of exposition and stuff like that, just the dichotomy between last week and this week was striking to me, because even though they're both the same type of episode as far as just character driven and stuff like that, this one was so much more enjoyable. And I agree with Carice, like I've already watched this one I think four times now, and I watched it once raw, and then I watched it sub three times. But and the music is fantastic. I really like "God Bless You." It's a nice little song, and I like the way that they used it at the end and then had it play out as far as you know over the closing credits. So, one last thing. I finally they have started to humanize Mikomo. You know, this episode really did it. And again, it goes back to the nuance that I was mentioning. There's a lot of times when she came in and sang happy birthday to her, she actually smiled. Like when she was done, she smiled. Like she showed her mouth was open. It wasn't just her little cold smirk that she does. And then she put like little things, like she put her hand on Freya's shoulder, which was, I was like, oh wow, that's really interesting, like she's opening up more. And she said, oh yeah, you know, when she told Kaname, oh yeah, I'll think about showing up to the party, and that kind of surprised Kaname. She was like, oh, she'll think about it, wow. you know? And so when she showed up, and like all these little points throughout the episode, they're starting to like break down her walls and humanize her. And I like it because she's not just like this cold biatch.
Could it be the effect of the dreams, do you think, Mike? Like, as she's gradually getting these small fragments of possibly her past, she's opening up a bit more?
Maybe. Just in much the way that, because obviously she's fold sensitive as well. And so I think that much the way that Hayate's pendant reacts to Freya, I'm thinking maybe Freya's song and Freya's voice is starting to have that same kind of effect on Mikumo, maybe. So anyway, overall, like this episode. Great. I'd like to get back to some action, but for a character-driven episode, it was cool.
Yeah, I hear that. So, Egan, did you have any final points?
Just what I had said earlier, so thank I'm pretty God, much so good with that. Yeah, I'm still around here.
Okay. Well, look, I guess, Craig. Come on. We've been waiting for this.
Tell everybody how wrong we are.
The problem is, I don't know how long we have. The big thing was that it sounds like none of you like... The big thing I was like last week, I couldn't believe no one liked the episode, really, because I thought it was fantastic. And I liked this one a lot as well, because this, especially in contrast to one another, you got the kind of two sides of this... Essentially, the lead players on both sides of a conflict and the different way they react to things, because these guys were taking the time out to celebrate one of their joy, like one of them having a birthday, and they're, you know, making happy, and it was all about making each other feel happy while they could. Whereas the Windermerians, it was all about, well, our happiness, we're just going to put it aside over there and keep going with the mission because that's more important than our personal lives. And I thought that contrast between them in the two episodes was really, really cool. We'd have to do a whole episode on the last, on episode 15 to explain why I liked it so much and disagree with a lot of what you guys are saying. But generally, I'm getting ready to see some jets shoot each other. I think it's interesting that while Hayate has been seen in his Valkyrie at least twice since he took it from... since he used... what's his name? Messes. Haven't actually seen whether or not he's repainted it or anything, because the one time it had armor on, and the second time it was in the distance and you didn't see it. And in this one, you see the four parked next to each other, and you can see the number two, which looks to be Hayate Blue, but I wasn't 100% sure. It's right at the front. You see a quick shot of them all lined up. Overall, I just am... I'm hooked. I think this show is great. I wasn't that keen. I think it was like episode 10 or 11. There was one... I don't think it was 10, but there was one sort of just before the big sort of shift with Mesa that I thought was a bit meh. But other than that, I've been loving every episode. I thoroughly enjoyed 15. I thoroughly enjoyed 16. I think the characters are all phenomenal. I just think it's a great show.
Well,
I'm ready for more at any moment. Well, and yes, I'm not explaining why I think you're all wrong, but honestly, we would be here a long time.
And I'll throw this out briefly, Craig, because we are, you know, running short on time.
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
It's late for that's you guys, but just so people, you know, don't think. Just so people know what it is you're commenting against. I mean, I'm on record. I think in the last few episodes as well, I feel that we'd established a pattern with how the episodes went up until 13, and that take the Jellyfish Festival, for example, while I wouldn't expect every episode to have something as dramatic as Mesa's death happen, there was a good balance of, all right, we've got something plot related or some kind of slower paced event for half the episode, and then some kind of battle or some kind of small climax. And I think we mentioned each episode was almost like a new end of a new version of this kind of song with music and this synchronicity that you'd get at the end of a series. We're almost getting every episode. And I feel that after the episode 13, it took a turn to change that rhythm entirely. And now we're getting these more dedicated standalone, well, not standalone, but, you know, more one note episodes, I guess. So, you know, this episode was all about the character development on the hero side, which is fine. And the last one was all about getting more details on the Windermere, which was fine. But I think that, first of all, it's changed from its initial kind of episode balance, and I haven't seen a pattern or a balance that kind of replaces that yet. And then, of course, after episode 13, where, wow, we're declaring war on the galaxy, and now we're barely mentioning it for three episodes. And that's where I feel the momentum of the show has dropped off. Now, that's not to say that this isn't, you know, mid-series mark. So we don't know how many episodes we have left. It could be 25 episodes. It could be 27. This is episode 16. We've got anything between 9 to 11 episodes left. This may be the lull before for a storm. But as I've said a few times in the past, you know, there's so many mysteries that have been left unsolved. And now there's this threat of much larger scale conflict. And there's been very little, even if 5 minutes of each episode was dedicated to kind of showing what was happening on that front, I guess I'd be a little more satisfied with the balance of these episodes. I just feel like we had momentum. Let's drop that momentum like a rock and focus on the characters, which is a different kind of development. I just feel like it lost that pace.
I still don't agree that there's no plot development, especially in 15 over 16. 14 had less plot development than 15.
I agree.
14 was just about them trying to figure out what they were going to do. 15 sets up and knocks down a whole bunch of information.
Well, that's the thing. I guess it's setting it up, but it's not really showing it in action yet. Not moving. Like, so we're expecting things, right? So it's like setting up all these mysteries and we're waiting for answers and they're not coming yet. Now, again, I don't like to judge a series until I've seen it to the end. Adrian, I'll tell you, I don't review shows episode by episode. I hate doing that. I don't even like watching episodes as they air. I prefer waiting till I can watch them all in one hit. Macross is very much one of the exceptions to those rules. This has taken a turn. I don't like to say a turn for the slower, because this was not a slow episode. But the overall plot momentum, I feel, has been put on the back burner, shall we say.
Well, I'm just going to say, this episode reminds me of one of the original SDF Macross episodes. I don't know if Prime the title time? Is correct, but...
Was it that Private Time? Oh, no, the Roy and Claudia one?
Yeah.
Oh, damn, I got it.
You got it right. Where the overall story is about the relationship, the budding relationship of Claudia and Roy, that is... The majority of the animated footage is their story, but the actual reason is to get Misa off her butt to pursue Hikaru.
Right.
So there is a reason for that story, and there's a reason for that episode, mm-hmm. which this does the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And I guess, you know, all we can do is wait and see what happens in subsequent episodes. I just know that, you know, I guess this would feel like less of a... I hate to use the word lull because of the negative connotations, but less of a lull to me if I was watching these, you know, more back-to-back. The wait for each week, it's like, all right, they've declared war, my God, this is happening in Windermere. Now, what's going to happen now? Oh, it's a birthday episode. It was a great episode. It was a well-done birthday episode, but I want answers.
Yeah, I was really surprised none of you guys were like, the animation was this or that or blah, 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 because you guys were going to town on, like, two episodes back. I thought you all were crazy, because this episode had the most amazingly detailed ice cream cone. I'm serious. You go to that scene where Hayate is handing it to Mirage.
Okay.
Now that's some tension work right there. No, I'm just kidding. What? I mean, you guys pick apart the dumbest stuff, I swear. I'm in Starbucks listening, and I'm like,
"That's
what
that,
are
last
we talking
week,
about?"
I was on the bus last week, and I was starting to write out all my refutes to things, and I'm like, I'm going to take me hours. I'm never going to get through it. And who am I going to send it to? Gwyn? He'll just ignore it.
Yeah.
So I.
Craig, I'll be happy to read it.
I might. You know, one thing that I couldn't believe you guys didn't mention. I got only one thing about last week's episode. Royd and Keith are sitting in the car and talking, and Royd says something like along the lines of, "You opposed me when I said we had to do something, but like we had to do something for a greater victory." And then you see a shot of the Matter Eater explosion, followed by the white Windermerian jet crashed, and Royd and Keith crawling out of the wreckage. And I'm like, how does that not... Rickage. How does that not clue in? And Keith's looking super pissed. Now, maybe they got shot down by UN forces who were setting off the bomb, but I reckon that they blew... That was them crashing after setting off the bomb. I bet you money.
No, that's completely possible. Again, last
and you, week... And none of you guys mentioned it. I was like, what are you doing? It's a big thing.
Well, last week we only had time to watch it once, and it was very rushed, so yeah.
Well, that's why you should always wait till the next day.
But I do agree with you. I think that episode is a lot better than people think. And it'll probably explain a lot later when people look back at it.
Hmm.
You know what? I see my mistake. Adrian, next time we miss an episode, buddy, you and me, all right? We'll record something and talk about how everyone else messed up. That sounds good? You all right? You with me?
Talk about how everyone else is wrong?
Yes.
How would that be different from any other podcast?
Well, we'd let other people get an edge word in edgewise.
What do you think, Mike? Does it sound like me?
Sounds like working for you at Anime Expo.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Just do what I say.
Alright, this is it. We're done. Alright. So if no one's got any final points to throw out there, I'm gonna wrap this up. It's been about an hour and a half. So we've talked three times the length of the episode.
Alright, hold on, Gwyn. Wait. Egan, are you awake?
Still here.
Mm-hmm. Name of this episode, please.
I was ready for the next one, but Hesitant Birthday?
Yes. Yeah. Kamenai Birthday. Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the next episode.
Yeah, next
is
one.
Called Kaku-san on stage. I guess proliferation on stage, proliferating on stage.
So
the right. Diffusion of light is when I looked it up, but I'm not sure.
I think it's scatter is what a lot of places are translating it as.
Hmm.
Scatter on stage, but
well, the
it's apparently something to do with like light diffusion, so I don't know.
Interesting. All right. Well, thanks for that, Egan, and thanks for that, Mike. Speaking of which, Mike, where can people find you?
You can find me here at Mike in Redlands, and I have been silent the past few weeks, so send me stuff.
Cool. Because you couldn't see the Twitter?
Exactly, pretty much.
Carice, where can people find you?
Easiest place to find me is on Twitter as well, at Carice67. And you can find me on Tumblr as well, but I'll usually post the links on Twitter, so just find me there.
Including the translation of an article I believe you put up a couple of days back about Frontier.
Oh, yeah, I did do that.
That's been making the rounds. A lot of people seem to be reading it. So by all means, check out Carice's stuff. Egan is Egan. Adrian, where can people find you?
Egan, you can find Egan Saturdays between the hours of 10 and 5 at Frank and Sons, wandering the halls, looking at stuff that he doesn't need to buy because he lives in Tokyo, and I don't know why he goes there anyways.
There's still things that I can't get anywhere else.
I need another drink.
I can't think of any right now, but yeah, I'm sure there will be.
That would be a burrito. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Where can we find you, Adrian?
You can find me on Twitter at Giant Robo. Recently starting to be a little bit more active on the tweeting now that Delta's going to be coming out. And you can find me on this podcast. And you can find me on complaining about how somebody got something wrong somewhere on a forum, I guess.
Okay. Oh, you laugh. You someone This is Gwyn Campbell. You can find me at Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C, one word, on Twitter. Or you can always contact us at speakerpod@gmail.com. Of course, we're always open to emails or being contacted on social media. If anyone ever wants to throw us questions, ask for clarifications, or play some of this newfangled PlayStation Vita game with us when it comes out, drop us a line. But on that note, this is a unexpectedly long birthday edition of the Gur Talk, folding out. Okay, let me see.
I guess you can find me. Hang on, stop, on another podcast.
Let me edit that.
You can find me on another show.
Stop and let me edit this in. All right.
Kicked off.
Stop and let me edit this.
All right. SNN News Bulletin. Breaking news.
I've argued too much.
Go for it, Craig.
You can find me on the podcast that I do, since apparently I'm no longer welcome on this one. You can find me at the Repack Podcast, or you can find me on Twitter. I'm at the Screamman. Those are probably anywhere you find Refact Podcasts. That's going to be, I'll get the messages and at the Screamman on Twitter. I guess I'll start back up my own Macross podcast, since I'm apparently leaving this one behind.
You can find Craig on the cutting room floor of the Speaker Podcast.
You guys were starting your own podcast. Come on.
That's right.
There you go.
Yesterday I did a search on Macross Podcast, and the Speaker Podcast came up from the top of the page, and multiple times, and the Repack Podcast came up as well.
We aim to please. I'm the only one who talks about it, but apparently it gets me near the top of the list.
And I think the something thieves, I keep forgetting.
Oh, Reverse Thieves.
Reverse Thieves, they showed up. But yeah, we're all up there. Us reputable Macross-ish podcasters.
And you got the ish after the wrong word. It's not Macross-ish, it's reputable-ish Macross podcast.
燃え上がるがれきの上に立っている。いつからか忘れたけど、行き先も敵ない炎の中では探しても見つけても意味がないよ。壊せ、超えろ、過去のエクスタシー。 たとえ最悪でも未来を選べ。行くよ、ギリギリまでラフ。